98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Thursday afternoon. Good afternoon and welcome into today's edition of the Burns and Gambo Show here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. We are live from the Oxygen Community Studios. My name is Dave Burns, alongside the one, the only, John Gambadoro. Hi, Gambo!
Let's go Giants tonight, baby!
Let's go Giants. I would love to.
I would love to see the Dodgers lose.
Just be phenomenal. It really would. And you know, when they don't, and when the Dodgers win, and when they advance to the NLCS, you're going to get the tweets. I'm going to get the tweets because there's so many Dodger fans here in town. Hey, you're rooting against your team. I can hear it now. I can feel it now. So I've got two reasons to want the Giants to win tonight. One,
shut up the Dodger fans.
I hate the Dodgers. And two, to avoid all of the Dodger fan tweet that is going to happen after that game if and when they win.
That's one. And last night, I don't know. For some reason, I checked the ESPN. I'm like, oh, Mercury game was going back and forth. I turned it on. I caught like the end of the game, like the last 5 minutes of the game, and I watched the whole overtime. What a thrilling game that was. Forget about the Diana Taurasi hugging every member of the Suns after the game was over. That was a freaking great game. Yeah, was a great game.
They were not playing well at all until that fourth quarter, and then in the overtime.
They were like down six, and then they took the lead.
Diana Taurasi was terrific in overtime. She was
that
so good.
That blonde-headed girl that tied it up for Chicago, that tied the game up and sent it to overtime. That was a hell of a move to the basket.
Yeah, it was.
Driving layup around somebody, scoop shot underneath and up and in, and then the Mercury turned the ball over. With 4 seconds left, they turned the ball over, and then Taurasi just got hot in overtime, and they won. I enjoyed watching that game.
It was a fun game. And the Sun support on the side, Devin Booker with the old-school camera, taking pictures with the old-school camera.
That's great.
That was really good stuff right there.
I have one of those old-school cameras.
Oh, I think we all do, somewhere.
With the flashbulb. I have the one with the flashbulb. That you need the flashbulbs for?
Yeah, you like plug in the flashbulbs to it.
Yeah, you put the flashbulb up top.
Is that one of the ones in the old West times where you have to sit still for like 2 minutes?
My wife looked at that camera. She goes, "What the hell is this?" I go, "You're supposed to put a bulb up top. There's usually four bulbs.
They were like this.
Then you got to change out the bulb.
Disposable flashbulbs, right?
Kodak.
And you'd plug them into the top of the camera. Yeah. And then once it was done, you threw it away. And
wonder if that's worth any money.
It's not an old time Western in Jordan. Come on, man. I mean, Wolfley's the one with the birthday today. He's the one we should be giving crap for being old today, not us, with stuff like that. Happy birthday, Wolf, by the way. Let's weigh in on our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in. Brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
All right, so we update with what's going on with the Cardinals and the Browns coming up on Sunday, both in terms of injuries and now this interesting COVID situation that has popped up and has suddenly become a story. Dan Graziano, the first to report, ESPN NFL Insider. The Cardinals have had three positive COVID-19 tests this week. They are one more positive test away from going into another set of more intensive protocols. That would mean more testing for several players and personnel. According to the report, the positive tests include one player, assumingly this Chandler Jones.
We know who it is, yeah.
And then two members of the staff. We don't know who the members of the staff are. Kelvin Beachum, meeting with the media today, was asked what happens when there's a positive COVID test and you might have to up your level of testing. Here's what he said.
Guys just try to mask up, and you know, we have the test to make sure that, you know, guys are good to go. We just try to do everything to make sure we're safe. You know, it's unfortunate to have somebody of his caliber test positive at this junction in the season, having the type of season that he's having. But as a team, we just got to find a way to stay safe and make sure that we don't have any spreading going on in the locker room and in the building.
Now, we'll be clear about this one. Graziano followed up his reporting with a tweet, quote, "To be clear, there is absolutely no, all caps, no indication that the Arizona-Cleveland game is in jeopardy. The Cardinals are not the first team this year to have multiple positives, nor would they be the first to go into intensive protocols." So this is not a first. This is not unusual, and it does not put Sunday's game in any kind of jeopardy.
Listen, vaccinated players can get COVID, you know, so it's, you know, this is just something that, you know, teams are going to have to deal with. And that's why they test on a regular basis. But yeah, whether you're vaccinated or not vaccinated, you could still get COVID if you're vaccinated. So, that's something that they're going to have to keep their eye on. You know, and that, but what was just said there. You just hope you don't have a spread. You know, you just hope it doesn't spread. You hope that those who are vaccinated, you know, are protected, and that maybe they don't get it, or if they get it, it's very light and it doesn't affect them that much. But I think everybody knows that next year, I think we'll still be in the same spot where they'll be testing. A year from now, do I think that they'll still be testing? Yeah, I think they'll still be testing for COVID a year from now.
Now, there was some good news on the front when it comes
great
to
news.
The Cardinals.
The boys are back in town.
The boys
are
back in town. Byron Murphy and Marco Wilson technically never left town, but they were definitely back on the practice field today.
Don't ruin my song.
Sorry. Okay. The boys are back in town.
Thank you.
They're back. They both are dealing with ribs injuries. They both returned to the field on Thursday, both in limited capacities. I'm looking at the official injury report right now. Both were limited in practice, but they were back.
Getting the duo to return, for practice today, you know, the open portion being seen, that was really good. I mean, you're hoping that both guys get back this week. I mean, it's Thursday. You still got tomorrow. You got Saturday. You got a few more days to kind of see where they are, right? Jordan Hicks was absent today, and so was DeAndre Hopkins. So Jordan Hicks is an interesting one, which we'll talk about Zaven Collins' role with the team here. But I think getting those two cornerbacks, Byron Murphy's having a special year. He's having a very special year right now. So getting him back, and Marco Wilson, man, you look at the numbers for Marco Wilson, passes defensed and things like that. He's been great. He's been really good. So having your two of your top three cornerbacks back is a big deal.
Here's Vance Joseph from today. Hopeful Murphy and Marco can both play on Sunday.
You know, hopefully, both guys can go this week. It's early still. It's only Thursday, so we got two more days to kind of vet those guys and see where they are health-wise. But hopefully they are both ready to go on Sunday.
Back on the Chandler Jones situation, assuming he doesn't play Sunday because of the COVID deal, Vance Joseph today may be tipping his hand a little bit when talking about kind of what the plan is with no Chandler Jones.
Obviously, Chan's a great pass rusher. He's a great football player, you know, in general. Not having Chan, you know, will be an issue, you know, but we have guys that are capable backups, you know, who deserve a shot to play, you know, more snaps like Ardeck and those guys and Junk and DK. You know, so obviously not having Chan is a huge, huge miss for us. But I'm excited to watch Dennis play. You know, and that's our defensive mindset. You know, one guy goes down, next guy gets excited about having a chance to play. You know, more reps. So obviously you want Chan out there, but as far as the overall concern, I don't have a bunch of concerns.
Yeah, Dennis Gardeck was, you know, he got taken off injured reserve a couple of weeks ago, put on the active roster, and working his way back, had that ACL injury, the ACL surgery, you know, last year. But we know this, when we saw him play last year, he was dominant. He's an important part of the special teams, but he's also a really good pass rusher as well, and in limited snaps. He had 7 sacks last year in limited snaps. He can get after the quarterback. So, you know, if he's healthy and he's good to go, that'll be a nice boost for the Cardinals.
Yeah, interesting that it was Gardeck, the name that he also mentioned. Yeah. Junk, which is Marcus Golden, and he mentioned DK, which is Devon Kennard, but spent a little extra time on Dennis Gardeck. For the Browns, they got a lot of their guys back today, too, in practice, with 4 very notable exceptions of guys who did not practice on back-to-back days. Nick Chubb did not practice again today. Kareem Hunt did not practice again today. And their 2 tackles, Jack Conklin, who didn't practice yesterday, didn't practice again today. He's their right tackle. Jedrick Wills started to practice yesterday, had to stop. And he didn't practice again today.
Wow.
So the 2 starting tackles for the Cleveland Browns were both DNPs going into a Thursday practice. That is something to keep an eye on from their perspective.
Yeah.
That and both running backs who didn't practice on back-to-back days.
Yeah, I mean, because that helps your pass rush, right? I mean, if their 2 tackles are out or they're limited, I mean, that could... I would like to have a healthy Chandler Jones, but this could bode well for J.J. Watt and Dennis Gardeck in the pass rush and Marcus Golden and those guys if they get to go against 2, you know, 2 backup tackles or 2 tackles that aren't healthy.
Now, look, DeAndre Hopkins, you mentioned it. He didn't practice yesterday. He didn't practice today.
I never even think about it.
I imagine in Cleveland, they're probably feeling the same way about Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Like, it's not even – it's the tackle situation that I'm really looking at there, honestly. The running backs, I would assume – that those guys are a lot like D-Hop here, where it's just they don't practice and we don't worry about it. They'll get ready to go on Sunday and do what they have to do, and all the cliches apply. But the tackles, and especially a guy who has to start practice and says, never mind, can't do this, that's not a good sign.
Well, you know, the Chubb thing is interesting. He's got a calf injury. And, you know, you would think if that calf's bothering him, he's probably not going to be 100%. You've got Kareem Hunt. who could start if he can't go. So we don't know his status right now. It's kind of up in the air at this point. And I think we'll find out tomorrow. That'll be a big indicator if he's able to. And we'll talk to Jake Trotter about this in a little bit, who covers the Browns. But we'll just try to see if we can get an update on where Chubb is.
In fact, that's exactly what we're going to do next. Their record is only 3-2. The Browns seem like a team better than that record might indicate. What are the expectations for Sunday's Cardinals game from their perspective, a Browns perspective? We'll talk with Jake next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Back here with you on the Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. We head now to Cleveland. We've been talking a lot about the Browns, obviously, with this game coming up on Sunday. A lot of injuries, Baker Mayfield, a lot of talk about the Browns around the league after what they did against the Chargers.
I thought we were going to talk to this next guest about Oklahoma's chances of making the football playoffs.
I believe
what about Oklahoma? What about leaving the Big 12?
That's why in the past we've had our next guest on the show, but he is now covering the Browns for ESPN.com and has for a while. Jake Trotter, who joins us here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Welcome back to the show, Jake. Sorry if we played a little This Is Your Life here. We apologize for that.
No, it's okay. I was holding that Big 12 together with popsicle sticks and glue, apparently. And
man,
when I left, the whole thing fell apart.
I know, right?
Damn.
You leave the Big 12, and it's just like you're duct tape, man. It just, it's just gone, like that.
Although that was a hell of a Red River rivalry game. That last one was terrific.
Yeah, it probably, you know, obviously wasn't there, but I started to think that might have been number one, or at least in that conversation, of the best Red River game we've ever seen. I think, you know, 2008 always stuck out to me. Sam Bradford and Colt McCoy, I mean, who were just unbelievable in that game. And obviously that game had national championship implications, but that, just the craziness of the comeback and the quarterback change, that one had to be up there.
All right, let's talk about the injuries to the Browns, because that's just what we got done talking about a second ago from a Cardinals perspective. And from the Browns perspective, that injury list is just as long and just as distinguished as the Cardinals injury list. Who are you the most concerned about in terms of their availability for this game on Sunday, the way you see it, Jake?
Yeah, I think the running backs right now, you know, Stefanski, you know, the Browns head coach, was pretty optimistic yesterday. I mean, I asked him, like, who are these guys you're kind of concerned about not being able to play on Sunday? And he has been willing to rule guys out in the middle of the week. And he would not do that with anybody on the injury list right now. You know, that being said, if Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb don't practice tomorrow, you would have to really wonder about their availability for Sunday. And they need both those guys. I mean, both those guys are kind of the engine of what makes this Browns offense go. You know, they're able to keep each other fresh. Kareem Hunt is tremendous in the passing game as well. So if they lost either one of those guys for Sunday, that would be huge. And I think looking at the injury report now, that's what really sticks out to me.
No, we look at the rushing numbers, and it's obviously they're leading the league in almost every category, and Chubb's been fantastic, and you got a great backup in Hunt. But let's talk about the tackles, too, because you got some injuries with your two starting tackles. How big of a factor is that in the success of the running game?
Yeah, it's actually, I think, more of a concern in the passing game. You know, you go back to that Chargers game last weekend, and the Browns have the ball, 3rd and 9. If you give the ball back to Justin Herbert, he's probably going to score the way that game was going. And Kevin Stefanski called a draw. And I asked him after the game to kind of explain his thinking there, because you're basically putting the game in the hands of your defense, a defense that hadn't stopped the Chargers the entire second half. And you know, he mentioned the tackles as being one of the primary reasons for that call. So, you know, Jedrick Wills, you know, he's had this ankle injury since the season opener. You know, it's not going to get better until he gets off it a little bit. So I think he's a real question mark. You know, didn't play last week. They went with Blake Hans, who's essentially a center at left tackle. And then you lose Jack Conklin. They're all pro right tackle with a knee injury. And he, you know, he's up in the air right now as well. And you go with a rookie in James Hudson. So, you know, the Browns still ran the ball against the Chargers. Pretty good Chargers defense, even with their backup offensive tackles for much of the game. But I would be concerned. You know, we'll see what happens with Arizona and its COVID situation. But that would concern me in terms of protecting Baker Mayfield more than, you know, can the Browns run the ball? Because they have shown that they can run the ball with just about any running back. and even with guys missing up front in their offensive line.
Jake Trotter, who covers the Browns for ESPN, he's our guest here on the Burns and Gambo shows. We're talking about this matchup coming up on Sunday. You mentioned Baker. Let's talk about Baker Mayfield and what's been a real, I don't want to use the word controversial, unless that's the right word to use. There's been a lot of conversation about Baker Mayfield after that game against the Chargers. From the perspective there in Cleveland, how much doubt is there about Baker, not only in the short term, but in the long term in terms of what he does for the Browns?
Yeah, it was weird. I mean, the Browns became the first team in NFL history, including the playoffs, to score 40 points and not turn the ball over and lose. And everybody was focused on Baker Mayfield after the game, at least nationally. I mean, it feels like every time I turn on the television of my employer, you know, Baker Mayfield is being litigated, and everybody's completely forgotten, I guess, that he led the Browns to their first playoff victory in 26 years from week 7 to week 15 of last year. He was number 3 in the league in QBR. He has not played great at times this year. The Minnesota game was a disaster, but, you know, otherwise he's been okay. So I think it's fair to question, you know, whether the Browns should sign him to a $40 million whatever contract. I mean, that's a lot of money. But to blame what happened on Sunday on Baker Mayfield, I think, is a reach.
He played. Go ahead, Jake. I was going to say, I'm fascinated by the Baker thing because, you know what, I remember when the last time they had a good quarterback, in my opinion, was Bernie Kosar. Before that, they had Brian Sipes. So they had two good quarterbacks in a row. I like both of those guys. They haven't had anybody good since. The thing with Mayfield is, I think I read something in one of the papers, like, can you win a Super Bowl with this guy? You know, and the feeling is that they can't. So do you go after Russell Wilson? Do you go after Deshaun Watson? Do you try to make a trade for a quarterback that might be able to win a Super Bowl for you? I'm fascinated by Baker because he's, you know, is he an Andy Dalton type of guy? Is he a Ryan Tannehill type? Is he the type of quarterback that you could just win enough games with but never really win at all with?
Yeah, and Dan Orlovsky and I have gone back and forth over message in the last couple of weeks about Baker and this argument about, you know, whether he can win a Super Bowl. You know, one thing Dan will bring up, I mean, look at all the quarterbacks that have made the Super Bowl in the last 5 years. You're talking about, you know, Carson Wentz, Nick Foles combination. You're talking about Jimmy Garoppolo. Go back a little bit further, Joe Flacco, Jared Goff. So, like, of course, with this team, you can get to a Super Bowl with Baker. And last year, everybody seems to have forgotten what happened last year, but they didn't just get to the playoffs in spite of Baker. Yeah, they were a really good running team, and early on in the year, that was their bread and butter. But the back half of the season, they were winning games because of Baker Mayfield. They went to Tennessee and won because Baker threw 4 touchdowns in the first half. They went to Cincinnati and had this dramatic comeback because Baker threw 4 touchdowns in the second half. They hung with Baltimore on Monday Night Football and scored 40-something points and lost that game too, by the way, because Baker went off in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know, and it seems like Baker gets crushed because he's not Aaron Rodgers or Tom Brady, but what I would say to that is, like, who is? I mean, there's only 3 or 4, 5 quarterbacks at that level. You know, maybe Kyler Murray joins them here, but, you know, I think Kyler still has a lot to prove as well, despite how well he's played to start the season. So, I mean, I think Baker has the potential to be a fringy top 10 quarterback in the NFL.
Jake,
you're just going to throw that away because he's not, you know, top 3. So I think it's a little bit unfair because he's not a top 3 guy that all of a sudden he's just trash. That's what is interesting to me about the argument.
Jake, leave us with this, and we're up against it, but I want to get your thoughts on Odell Beckham Jr. and whether you think there'll be a more concerted effort by the Browns to get him involved this weekend after he has not been involved so far this season.
Yeah, I mean, this is another argument I feel like that we've been having, at least in Cleveland, since 2019, is, you know, can you get Odell the ball more? Can you target him more? And I'm of the belief, and I'm becoming more and more convinced, that the Browns and Odell Beckham and Baker Mayfield might be better off if Odell was playing somewhere else, because when Odell has not been on the field, Baker's been a much better quarterback. You know, everybody's been focused on the shoulder injury that Baker suffered in week 2. But whatever, you know, the other thing that happened is Odell came back and suddenly Baker immediately did not play as well. Odell has a ton of gravity on the field, and there are plays they're able to convert because of that. But that just have not figured out how to utilize, you know, his playmaking. And I think it's a Baker issue where Odell being on the field just fits in Baker's head. And, you know, he goes from targeting him way too much and forcing the ball in the coverage to, like, Odell is wide open and he doesn't see him. It is a very strange chemistry issue, and they are running out of time to figure it out. So, I mean, yeah, you'd love to get Odell the ball more. I just don't know if this iteration of the Browns with Baker Mayfield, that they're capable of doing it and maximizing him. And so I think at some point you're going to have to ask a question like, what do we need to do to make our team better and give our quarterback the best chance? It might not be Odell Beckham Jr. being a Brown, and it's not his fault. I'm not blaming Odell. It's just kind of the nature of the situation.
Jake, we appreciate the time. Thanks so much for the answers and the conversation.
Yeah, good chatting again.
Yeah, we will talk again for sure. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Jake.
Jake Trotter joining us from ESPN.com on the Arizona Sports Line. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show for the rest of the season, the Cardinals going to be without Max Williams. This we know. In the process of figuring out who replaces his production, have we been looking at the wrong position group? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo show.
The Burns and Gambo Need to Know Twitter Poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Jordan's here with us with today's Twitter Poll question of the day, leading right into our topic here at 2:30. How convenient is that? Jordan, what do you have for us?
So with Max Williams out with an injury, who do you think is most likely to get those targets Sunday against the Browns? Or his targets, I should have probably phrased it that way. Your options are Christian Kirk, Rondell Moore, Chase Edmonds, or Darrell Daniels?
Moore. Give me more, more. You want to go Kirk? You're thinking Kirk.
No, I was actually thinking Chase.
Ooh, are you?
Yeah, I was actually thinking Chase.
We want more. We want more.
One of my favorite commercials ever. That's such a great commercial.
I'm going to say Chase. Chase Edmonds.
Rondell Moore is the clear favorite in this one. 51% of our voters are saying Rondell Moore. 29% say Christian Kirk. 11% for Chase Edmonds. And 8% for the tight end, Darrell Daniels.
It's you can vote on the poll question on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page. One word, at Burns and Gambo on social media. We have focused so much of the Max Williams conversation on where do they find another tight end. Looking inward on the roster, looking outward at other people's rosters. Do you trade? You sign Richard Rodgers to your practice squad. Tight end. Where do you get a tight end? Now, this only solves half of the problem, all right? This is just a who gets the targets. There's still a question to be answered about who does the blocking that Max Williams did, all right? But if we're just strictly having a conversation about offensively, who does Kyler Murray target more now that Max Williams is out for the season? You had this story in your email today, and they just straight up say, quote, it's possible one of Darrell Daniels or Demetrius Harris straight up replaces Williams, but the more likely scenario is enhanced usage of four wide receiver sets, and thus more. Don't expect the Cardinals to field another fantasy-relevant tight end in 2021. It's a fantasy-based article, but forget the fantasy implications for just a second. Let's talk about the football implications.
Uh-huh.
More? Is that what we can expect?
I think that this game is a gauge for Steve Keim. Can we survive with a combination of one blocking tight end and all wide receivers and get by without me having to trade a third-round pick to go get a tight end? I think this is a gauge. I think before, like, if they would have just traded for a tight end right away, now you're going to play that tight end if you just gave up a big draft pick for him. They might have a game or two here to see, okay, can we replace Max's production with one of our receivers in the passing game, and Daniels is a blocker in the running game. The only thing with Max is you just never knew. He's such a good blocker that and a good pass catcher that when he's on the field, you don't know. If Daniels is on the field, or if they're in a four wide receiver set with no tight end, you might be thinking they're throwing the football. So you may become more predictable as an offense without Max.
I'm looking at snap counts just to kind of get an idea of what we might, and this is for the whole season. I can look at each individual guy individually. But, like, for example, a guy like Chase Edmonds is on the field about 63% of the time. Does that go up now because Max Williams isn't out there? A guy like Christian Kirk. Christian Kirk so far has played in about 61% of the snaps so far this season. I would think that goes up without Max Williams out there.
I think the four wide receiver set is the most likely in the passing attack.
Rondale Moore, God, has only been on the field. This is amazing. Rounding up. I've got to round up to get there. 40%. He's only been on the field 40% of the time.
Yeah, that might be going up.
Oh, that's going up. I mean, that's one of those. That's one of those. Yeah, that's going up. Well, let me look at his game. I want to look at his game by game.
I still think
I want to see his game by game.
Yeah, I still think I want to take a look at Daniels. You know, I kind of want to take a look and see, you know, what he can do if he gets some opportunities, right? I mean, you know, you go back to college, like these guys all were able to do well and you know, catch the ball and stuff like that. I would like to see Daniels get an opportunity to play a little bit.
Cliff Kingsbury, post-game radio interview on Sunday. Admittedly, we probably need to get the ball to Rondale Moore a little bit more often.
He needs to touch it probably more. He's dynamic, and every time he gets it, something good seems to happen. Tremendous catch on the sideline that really led to points.
Here are Rondale Moore's snap counts so far this season in the five games they've played. 29%, 46%. 34%, 42%, and 48%.
Okay, it's going up.
It's
going up.
It went up, and then it went back down, and then it started going up again. 29, 46, down to 34.
But then up again in next two.
Back up to 42, and then back up to 48. Right. The 47.5% was a season high for him last week against San Francisco. Listen, that is going up this week. He will be on the field more than 48% of the time.
You should write all of those down, and let's see who makes the jump. Because it might be two or three different guys go up a little bit, or maybe one guy goes up a whole lot. But, you know, they need the tight end. I mean, they need a tight end that can block. I mean, it's so important to have that blocking tight end for their running game to be successful. And you don't want to become too predictable. So if you go to four wide receiver sets and teams don't think you're a threat to run the ball, you know, then they can adjust to that and, you know, go in nickel and dime packages. So I think it's, I mean, having Max was just, it was such a luxury because he was such a good pass catcher. And he was also such a great blocker that, you know, you just, when he was out there, you had no idea as a defense whether they were running the ball or throwing the ball when Max Williams was on the field.
Here's your Darrell Daniels. 22%, 31%, 34%, 19%.
Yeah, he's a converted tight end. Remember in college at Washington, he was a linebacker, I think. And they converted him to... They converted him.
I'd forgotten about that. He's a converted player?
He's a convert. He converted in college to be a tight end.
Okay.
You know, so that's the type of thing. He was a defensive player, and then he was a wide receiver, and then he moved to tight end. So he was a converted type of guy. But I still want to see him be given an opportunity to play. I mean, you got these tight ends. Let's, you know, who's the best tight end you have? Let's see what they could do.
But I do
because
like
you still need the ability to have a tight end at block.
I like your idea about how this is kind of almost like a little
it's
bit
a
of a litmus test. Yeah, it's a gauge. It's the dipstick,
can
right?
This offense hum without a blocking tight end.
And we're gonna pull out the dipstick and we're gonna take a look and see where the levels are and see how this thing is doing. And
before
and,
you give up a third round pick,
because you might not have to.
Or fifth.
You might have the tricky part is that Rondale Moore's not blocking anybody like Max Williams is. Christian Kirk isn't, but those targets in the passing game. Yeah, Rondale Moore, he's going up. He's going up this week. That is happening.
You know, the other thing
that
is
happening.
It's almost like a pitcher has a great fastball. Hey, we have four wide receivers. You can go in your nickel packages. Your fourth cornerback sucks.
Yeah.
We can tell you we're throwing the ball. You're still not going to be able to stop it.
Week six of the NFL season. It kicks off tonight with the Philadelphia Eagles and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There is still time for you to sign up for Bix Picks. Text the word pick to 620-620. Sign up. Compete against Dan Bickley. Your chance at the grand prize of a tailgate package featuring a Yeti Tundra cooler and grill, courtesy of Modelo Especial. Weekly winners will also get a $100 gift card to Cold Beers and Cheeseburgers. Text the word PICK to 620-620 to enter. Tonight is the deciding game of the NLDS between the Giants and the Dodgers. Is it also, I hadn't really thought of it this way, the de facto World Series championship game? We'll talk about that next on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Wow.
comes down to one game tonight. One team won 107 games. One team won 106 games. They've played each other 23 times so far this year. One team has won 12 of those. The other team has won 11 of those. They're about as evenly matched as two teams could be over the course of a 162-game season and a best-of-five series that's tied 2-2. And tonight, after nine innings, or maybe more, depending on how it goes, only one is going to be left, either the L.A. Dodgers or the San Francisco Giants.
Yeah, fifth winner-take-all postseason game between 100-win teams in Major League Baseball history. The fifth time that two teams that have won 100 games are playing each other in a winner-take-all game. Logan Webb versus Julio Urias.
Well, actually, that's not true. Urias got scratched.
It's
Corey Knebel. Not scratched. But here's the latest on this. The Dodgers are going to start right-handed reliever Corey Knebel, not left-handed starter Julio Urias.
Wow.
Urias is not hurt, so Knebel's probably an opener, paving the way for Urias to handle the bulk of the innings after the game starts. Because apparently the last time Urias pitched in Game 2, the Giants put in all their right-handed hitters.
Yes, that's what they'll do.
What they were going to do tonight. Just put in all of their righties. This way, by going with an opener, it forces Kepler to go with a more balanced lineup. And then, boom, out goes Knebel, in comes Urias, and off we go with a lineup that's better suited for Urias to have that kind of success.
I mean, outside of Chris Bryan, who's hitting .462, and Buster Posey, who's hitting .313, nobody else is hitting.
Nobody's hitting.
Crawford's not hitting. Longoria's hitting .153. Wilmer Flores, Donovan Solano, Darren Ruff. Nobody's hitting.
Yeah.
So you can say what you want. This game comes down. I mean, Webb's unbelievable. This kid he's fantastic. He's got a 1.78 ERA in the 14 home games, including game one when he dominated. He's 7-0 in big games. He's just been great. I mean, seven wins, no losses in the 14 home games this season with an ERA of 1.78. So that the Dodgers are going to have to figure out a way to score some runs. I saw something that was interesting. Colder and windier favors the Giants. You would think so, right? I mean,
yeah,
in the Bay Area,
they used to play
in those things. So, you know, one guy, I was reading this story about the game and said there's a trending forecast. It's, you know, depending on the weather, when it's been colder and windier, the Giants have gone 2-0. When it's been warmer and calmer, the Dodgers have gone 2-0. So depending on what the weather is and the wind and stuff like that, the colder and the windier weather has favored the Giants, and the warmer weather with no wind has favored the Dodgers.
Yeah, I read the same article, and they also pointed out that in games 2 through 4, the Giants have been outscored 16-5. Now, obviously, the Giants won one of those games because it was a 1-0 contest. The one home run from Longoria
game,
and then the home run that wasn't from Gavin Lux at the end there. But it would seem the Dodgers offense has kind of found its footing a little bit in these last few games. But depending on the conditions, I would think you're right. That's advantage Giants.
Whoever scores first has won every game.
Yep.
Right, that's been a key. If you score first, you win the game.
And in terms of that enticing tease that I mentioned a second ago about the win, is this like the de facto World Series game? Here's Jessica Mendoza from ESPN. She was on ESPN Radio this morning. And I've heard a lot of baseball fans talk about this. You got one team that's won 107 games and one team that's won 106. And one of them is going home after a five-game series.
I am so upset at the fact that this is a five-game series. And these two teams are the best records in baseball. I mean, look at college sports. It's like, when are you going to just, okay, division, and now we're going to go ahead and put you guys head-to-head when your records are the two best, not just in the National League, all of baseball. These are the two best teams. And let's face it, baseball needs great games in October. This is when people are paying attention the most to a sport that's losing its fan base during the regular season. So now we have this epic matchup. And honestly, the games have been ridiculous. Awesome. So let's have more of the two best teams and not have them face off in the division series. It's ridiculous.
Longoria said something similar. Like, they got to reseed it. Like, you got to reseed it. I mean, we should not be playing them. Like, you know, maybe they feel like that. Maybe you should have had Giants and Brewers and then Dodgers and Braves and let them play each other. So that way you end up with an NLCS of Giants, Dodgers, if those teams do what they're supposed to do.
It would have been the
Braves versus the Giants, it would have been the Dodgers versus the Brewers.
Dodgers, Brewers, Braves, Giants.
Going by record, yeah. Okay. If they had reseeded it, the Braves won 88 games. The Brewers won 95 games. So if you're going to go 1-4, 2-3. I took my son and his girlfriend to the airport today, and he and I, he's a huge baseball fan. We were talking about this in the car today, and it does – It's the best of five thing that bugs me about this series. You know, it's just, man, a series this good, this rich, with two teams this good, you five games, you know, you take a 162 game season and you narrow it down to five. The randomness of what can happen in a five game series, it's fun, but it's not. I do want more. I do feel like
they added a wild card game. I mean, they added a wild card game that you used to never really have, right? These one game wild cards. There's still the fear of how long can you play into the fall? Man, it gets cold in some of these. It's going to be cold in Boston. Like, you want to play into November?
Yeah, well.
Like, how long are you going to push it out for?
We've seen it before. I understand. I'm only talking about going from a best of five to a best of seven in this round. I mean, that to me seems like the most. I'm done with best of five series. I don't think a best of five series in baseball, given that the whole sport is kind of built on longevity and a long season, and now you're going to shrink it down to five games. I think best of five series should be done away with in baseball's postseason. All of them should. Now, there's a CBA that's going to be negotiated, hopefully, this offseason, and I would imagine the postseason is going to look very different next year. I think you're going to see expanded teams, expanded rounds. You're going to see more. You're going to see, I mean, we got that last year, right? Because of the short season.
How about again? You have to worry about the weather.
I agree. It's a concern.
Now, unless,
but
unless you went back to playing day baseball games, because then it doesn't matter. When the sun's out in New York or in Boston or in Philly or anything, it's not too bad, right? But they always want to play all these games at night when the sun, and it's when it gets cold. Like, there's a big difference between 2 o'clock in the afternoon and 7 o'clock at night on the East Coast.
Who you got tonight?
I'll take the Giants.
Well, I'm rooting for the Giants.
I'll take the Giants.
I think the Dodgers are going to win it.
The hell with the Dodgers.
Amen, but I think the Dodgers are going to win tonight.
I have one. If the Dodgers win, I mean, I'm all in on the Braves. I got nothing else. I told you I'm not watching one game in the ALCS. I won't even watch a game.
I got nowhere else to go.
I won't watch a game. But wait a second. You're a sports radio talk show host. You're supposed to talk about, I'm not watching any of their games.
Three of the four teams left would be your three least favorite teams in professional sports. The Red Sox,
wait, isn't
the
that your
Astros,
job to watch the games?
And the Dodgers.
I'm not watching the ALCS.
You'd left with the Braves. I'm getting so worked up about it. I'm choking on myself here. Text us your thoughts on the baseball postseason and whether they need to change it. The FanDuel text line, it's open at 620-620 right now. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, after spending the offseason completely redoing and retooling the roster, the Coyotes are about an hour away from the start of their regular season. What's their GM hoping to see tonight against the Blue Jackets? We'll ask Bill Armstrong next on the Burns and Gambo show.
I got nowhere else to go! I got nowhere else to go!